Welcome to another episode of $100 Plus Mileage. I'm your host, Anna Brown, joined by my colleague and co-host at Citizens Count, Mike Dunbar. Once again, we're here to break down one of roughly 1,000 bills in the New Hampshire legislature this year, giving you the unbiased facts, pros, and cons. This episode is near and dear to my heart because we're going to be talking about libraries. My first job was at a library, my mom is a librarian, and my sister is a librarian.
Wow, so many connections. And let's not forget that the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. was built from more than 30,000 tons of New Hampshire granite. So I think we're all connected to this topic.
Oh, and I have another library fun fact. State law protects the privacy of library records, which means even the police need a court order to see what you're reading. It also means that if a minor has their own library card, a parent does not have automatic access to their child's checkouts. This year, a state representative introduced a bill to open children's records for parents, but questions remain about liability and the legal role of libraries.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts when you think about it that kids can get their own cards for anything.
I remember it felt so official and cool to sign the back of my first library card. I think it's one of the most beautiful parts of our democracy. Everyone deserves free access to learning, no matter your age.
Okay, let's dig into this. Representative Arlene Quartiello from Atkinson is the primary sponsor of HB 1308, this year's bill to allow parents access to child's library records. This bill adds the following sentence to state law: all library records related to a minor's use of library materials or services shall be available to the parent or guardian of the minor.
You can all imagine why this is coming up. We've all heard the debate around books such as Genderqueer, and parents want to know what their kids are reading. Former State Representative Daniel Itze submitted testimony to that effect. He wrote, "Allowing parental access to their children's library records is necessary for them to execute their parental duties in protecting the health, education, and welfare of their children."
Rep. Quartiello, a library employee, also shared stories about the difficulty of dealing with a child's overdue books when she is unable to tell the parent the titles on the record. She talked about trying to help a parent scour the house for a missing book without even knowing what the title was she was looking for.
There were lots of librarians who showed up to testify against the bill, however. They said HB 1308 would create legal and logistical headaches. First, the bill doesn't specify how a librarian would determine if the person requesting a child's library records is the legal parent or guardian. Even if a parent presents a birth certificate for a child, that doesn't reflect any recent court rulings about custody or access. Releasing children's library records, including home address, to the wrong adult could create serious safety and liability issues. I saw the written testimony. Someone even suggested a pedophile might try to target a kid by getting that information. I don't know how likely that is, but certainly the bill doesn't provide any guidance.
Right. Reading through the written testimony also, there's several librarians who said that the bill isn't clear about what libraries might have to track and provide to parents. Things like internet browsing history, the games that kids play, what programs they attend, maybe even what books they flip through in the stacks.
Having worked in a library, I have absolutely no idea how libraries could track all that.
Yeah, that wouldn't just be time-consuming. We're talking about software system upgrades, but we're also kind of getting ahead of ourselves here now. Ultimately, the bill just doesn't clarify what constitutes library records.
True. I asked my mom and sister, and a lot of library software systems simply delete checkout records as soon as a book is returned. So some libraries like might not even have that very basic list people are looking for.
There are, of course, many arguments about children's rights to access information in private, particularly if they feel unsafe at home.
This is very similar to any of the other debates right now about what information children should be able to keep secret from their parents. Usually the conversation revolves around teachers and schools, but now libraries are getting thrown into the mix. There was a new angle I didn't think of, though. Pediatrician Ryan Ratz submitted written testimony that compared children's privacy at libraries to their privacy with a doctor. In most cases, parents have access to their children's medical records, but their access is not absolute. Sensitive issues from sexually transmitted diseases to mental health care, maybe a private conversation between a doctor and a child, depending on the age and circumstances. And I look, there's a few different laws, a few different ages, so I don't want to make any generalizations, but he made the argument that similar protections are appropriate for children in libraries.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought about comparing laws related to medicine and those to libraries.
Yeah, interesting times we're living in. And in general, kids occupy some gray area in the law. We didn't even get into the nuance that could exist around the age of the kids we're talking about.
Right. Well, they touched on that in the bill hearings. Supporters and opponents of HB 1308 both pointed out various workarounds that already exist for parents and children that want to share library records or keep them secret.
True. The bill sponsor herself pointed out that a teen can read a book in the library stacks without a parent or librarian knowing, so long as they don't check it out. Other librarians testified that if a parent only allows to check out books through their own card, that parent will always have access to a list of checked out materials. And each library in New Hampshire has its own policy on when a child can get their own library card and whether or not a parent must consent. So, for example, a kid might be able to get their library card at age 5, but only if a parent presents a driver's license, and then the kid still can't be in the library unless they are accompanied by a parent. I've definitely heard stories from my mom that that is an ongoing challenge, that they have to really enforce that a lot because they can't just have unattended children wandering around the library. But then also, maybe once a kid hits age 14, they can get a card on their own. They can be on the library on their own. But there's no laws around that, and it's totally all over the road from library to library.
Right, exactly. Well, Anna, if I have an opinion about HB 1308, what should I do?
Time for a mini civics lesson. The public hearing for HB 1308 happened back in January, but the House Children and Family Law Committee still has to vote on a recommendation for the bill, and that recommendation will go before the full House of Representatives for a vote. So, if you have an opinion, it's not too late. You have two options. You can email or call members of the Children and Family Law Committee to share your thoughts, or you can go ahead and reach out to your town's representatives, since the full House will also eventually be voting on this bill.
Right, and that meeting where the House committee votes on their recommendation is called an executive session, correct?
Yes, this is where we're getting into that nerdy civics stuff. So if you ever see that phrase, executive session, that's what's going on. The committee is making their recommendation. And those recommendations have a lot of power over the full House. Most legislators don't have the time to read every single bill start to finish and consider all the arguments, so they depend on committees to vet these bills.
Okay, you heard it here. Reach out to members of the House Children and Family Law Committee, or just go ahead and reach out to your state representative. You can find out tutorials and tips on how to do that on our website, citizenscount.org, and select Advocacy Toolkit from the navigation menu. All right, Anna, we've reached the time for Only in New Hampshire. What do you have for us?
I was looking through the New Hampshire Historical Society Moose on the Loose website for elementary schoolers when I found this one. Honestly, I encourage all adults to check out Moose on the Loose. There is so much to learn about our state's history. Anyway, our New Hampshire listeners are probably familiar with the concept of Old Home Day or Old Home Week. For me, growing up in Londonderry, it was a day near the end of the summer where there was a parade, a festival on the town common, probably a concert, and some fireworks. Sort of the last hurrah of summer before you go back to school, and maybe you'd see a bunch of people who you hadn't seen in a while, and you wanted to have like a cute outfit. So growing up, I thought every town in America does this. And it has certainly spread to other parts of the United States. But evidently, Old Home Day absolutely started in New Hampshire and really is only common in New England. At the end of the 1800s, farming was on the way out in New Hampshire. There were a lot of abandoned farms, and a lot of Granite Staters were moving to the cities and working in factories. Governor Frank West Rollins created Old Home Week in 1899 to celebrate state pride and rural culture. People who had left their hometowns were encouraged to come back, give back by repairing buildings, planting trees, and enjoying local culture. Old Home Days fell off during the World Wars, but had a revival in the 90s. But it turns out my hometown, Londonderry, is one of the few that has kept up their annual tradition since 1899.
Wow, who knew? I had no idea that was like a New Hampshire first thing.
Yeah, very New Hampshire specific. I mean, Mike, did you have an Old Home Day growing up?
I don't remember that being a thing, but I'm sure if you ask my mom, she has some old 90s, you know, film photos somewhere of me doing something like that. It seems like something that might have happened in Hampton. I'm sure Hampton had that.
Ah, the 90s, such like a golden time. But yeah, check out your Old Home Days, pie eating contests. I remember there was like a baby pageant one year, which I'm not even really sure how you judge a baby in a pageant, but I definitely remember watching that as a child and being kind of confused. Definitely probably mostly for the moms.
Well, it seems kind of cruel for us to be talking about this in the dead of winter. It's making me long for summer days.
Yeah, these days at the summer, I'm usually thinking about being at the beach and not necessarily in my hometown watching a parade. But after learning it's a New Hampshire specific thing, I feel like I absolutely have to go back to my hometown this summer and, you know, eat the hamburger and walk around the town square.
Yes, that sounds absolutely amazing. All right, well, that wraps it up for this episode of $100 Plus Mileage, but you can find more information and episodes at citizenscount.org. This podcast is made possible by a generous grant from Northeast Delta Dental. We'd also like to thank Franklin Pierce University for producing and the Granite State News Collaborative for hosting. Our theme music is composed by Mike Dunbar, that's me. Lastly, we thank you for giving us a listen and thinking about how you can be part of what makes New Hampshire by the people, for the people.